John. Thanks. I like Kiss. And John knows it, of course. My name is Jim, and I am an addict. First of all, I'd like to thank the committee for asking me to speak today. I'm humbled by that. It's something I usually don't do, but I found that I can do. And the only reason I can do this is when I let God into my life and let the fear go away. And I'm not saying that I'm not scared right now and I'm not nervous right now, but with God by my side, I know I'll get through this and I'll live and I won't fall down dead here, which is how I used to feel like I was going to die if I did something like this. I'll try to kind of keep it short because I know we have a workshop starting soon. But what's that? Speak up. You really want to hear this? All right. Rick wants to hear it. Trying to fix that a little bit. Yeah. There was something I wanted to say, but it's gone past me. Anyway, my story is not like any different than many years. I was born in Milwaukee and transplanted to Waukesha when I was in kindergarten. I had a mother, father, a grandmother who lived with us my whole life and enabled me. She was my biggest enabler through my whole life until she died a couple years ago at the age of 98, I believe. Great woman. I was the middle child of three brothers, and so I got away with a lot, and I didn't get away with a lot. But shortly after moving out to Waukesha, by the time, right around second grade, my father had passed away of his third heart attack in his sleep. He was a six-pack-a-day drinker, a smoker, history of alcoholism in his family, and a history of a bad heart in his family. So I lost my father when I was very young. Luckily, I've outlived him by many years now. And luckily, I think I have my father's addiction, my father's disease, and my mother's heart. So I like to think about it that way. Shortly after that, she sent me and my brothers to Catholic school, remarried a big bottle a day drinker, not a violent man, a very quiet man, takes care of my mother, still does. So he is still around at almost 80 years old. And from my grade school, I remember being a troublemaker, class clown, never really feeling right in my own skin. I always think I had to make people laugh and do things just to feel like people liked me. That's the little bit I remember. And by the time I hit probably around sixth, seventh grade, I started stealing the liquor from the liquor cabinet. I found that even though I was a big red Kool-Aid drinker, that I loved red Kool-Aid, I found that mixing it with grape Kool-Aid was a lot better. So I found that out in my younger years. It took me a while to figure that out, but when I did, I enjoyed it. So going in that Catholic school, it seemed that people would send their kids there that were getting in trouble and think they were going to fix them by sending them to a private school. But all they did was bring all their bad habits and teach me. There was a few guys there that probably by seventh grade, eighth grade, at recess, we were sneaking around the back of the church and smoking joints and doing that kind of stuff. And I started smoking cigarettes and getting in trouble and suspended from school for smoking. I was the first person in the history of St. William's and Waukesha to get suspended for smoking in the bathroom. So I carry that as a badge of honor today. My story continues as I go into middle school. I went from parochial to public, and all bets were off. I grew my hair out. I was already in somewhat of a basement band. I pierced my ear because my mom wouldn't let me do any of that when I was in Catholic school. And before I knew it, I met all the guys that I shouldn't have been hanging around with. I was meeting them before school and getting high and drinking. Before school, my grandmother, we'd go over to the liquor store to get soda, and she'd buy us a bunch of beer. I'd have her buy me a bunch of that cheap Mad Dog 2020 bottles. The good stuff, but that's all I could afford when I'm in ninth grade and I got a paper route or whatever. So I'd stash that under my bed, and before she'd take us to school in the morning in middle school, I'd slam as much as I could, try to catch a buzz, and meet up with the guys at the apartment building across the street and do whatever we did. I was dropping acid in ninth grade before school a couple times. That was a treat. And I wouldn't recommend that to anybody going to school. That's a buzzkill. I went on to high school, and high school was weird too, because the two grades ahead of me had open hours, so I could just blend in with them and hang out in the smoking area. So by the halfway through my sophomore year, I stopped going to school. I'd go to school, and my classes were hacky sack, smoking dope, and drinking beer at the park. That's what I did. Except for second semester, I think, of sophomore year, I went to driver's ed because I needed my driver's license. So I made sure I attended driver's ed. But my high school living was blackout drinking, was hanging out at a buddy's house whose mom got high and drank, so it was a nice place to hang out. If we couldn't find anything, that's where it started setting off. If we couldn't find anybody to get us beer or find any dope or anything like that, we'd all go home because there was nothing to do. You know, that was my life. I couldn't have fun without anything in me. And it boiled around to my first experience with recovery was December of my junior year in high school. I was going to some psychiatrist because I was doing half days at school when I'd go, and then I'd work the other half. I get credit for working. It's all kind of a blur, but I was seeing a psychiatrist as well. And I lied through my teeth to this guy constantly. But one night, things were catching up, you know. Problems with relationship I was having because they're so important in high school. And it was all me. You know, it was me being unfaithful and me doing this and me doing that. And I'm driving down the road, and I catch the light from an oncoming car, and I see my reflection in the mirror, and I see this person. I don't even know who this is anymore. You know, inside and out. It's one of those moments where I just seen myself for who I was instead of who I thought I was. And I went to that counselor, told him I was lying, blah, 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 and I need help. So he told me to go into the emergency room at Waukesha Memorial Hospital and tell him I need help and I need to get into treatment. And I found out he told me to do that because if I go to the emergency room and they don't have room for me, they just have to take me no matter what. So they put me in with the adults because there was no room for the kid in the kids area. And a big thing I always think of back at, and it was a big thing in my life to show me what drugs and alcohol could do to me and my continuing using could do to me, is I roomed with a guy who, at first I didn't know why, but he held a towel here all the time on his mouth. And one night when I came back up from the groups and that in treatment, and he told me a story about a couple of years before that, just being hopeless and not knowing where to turn, messed up with everything in his life. And he took his shotgun and went to the field next door, put it to his face, he pulled the trigger, and all he remembers is flying backwards. So that story always sticks out in my head. And he showed me pictures, Polaroids of his face, which probably didn't really need to do. But he showed me them of his face in the emergency room, the skin grafts they took laying there on the table to fix his face, and he had to hold a towel there because otherwise he'd just drool all over himself. That didn't stick, of course, because I was young and stupid yet, and I went through that treatment. As soon as I got out, they kept me an extra day. I was so happy I was getting on New Year's Eve. I was a happy guy. I was going to celebrate. And they said, Jim, guess what? You know, we're going to give you one more night free. Your insurance ain't going to pay for it, but we'll keep you to tomorrow, and we'll let you out tomorrow. So they kept me till New Year's Day. I got out, and I had a relapse, of course. But then I got involved with a school group, a recovery group. It was a teacher, a math teacher named Miss Osborne, and a lunch lady named Mom. They called her Mom. So it was Mom and Ozzie's group. And we'd meet once a week as a recovery group. And they started taking us to AA meetings at night, stuff like that. And I made it about 90 days. And I met a guy in there who actually transferred from Watertown and was in the Genesis House Happy House and finishing up high school. He became a good friend of mine, and I known him for many years. But, of course, I wasn't ready. And I went right back to where I was at. The counselor in there, one was an affected family member, so he wasn't really clicking with me, and the other one was an addict. And he insisted I was lying that I never tried cocaine, and up to this point, I never did. And so I showed him after I relapsed, like a week or two, I went and found my buddy's sister. I got some cocaine and I did it. I'll show him, you know? So it never really took off for me at first. Life continued on, and it progressed, the drinking, underage drinkings, possession fines, you name it. Nobody really wanted to be around me. That was normal. That were my friends from before. The band I was in was starting to take off because I wanted to be a rock star, and I could never work a day in life. I'd be a rock star. And that's why I like Kiss so much. But we got a singer who was 35 years old, and we were all like 17, 18. And he had long hair and a T-top Camaro. We lived in his mom's basement. Man, I wanted to be him, you know? Rock star. And the thing with him is he was like me. He liked to drink. He liked to do that. The other guys kind of just partied but in the band, but they didn't have that addiction like I have. And we would ride around before the shows. We'd opening up for Ruby Star on Monday nights at the Turning Point in Greenfield, on West Dallas when it was there. Every Monday night, we'd just go plug in and get free beer and do whatever. But him and I would ride around in his Camaro and do lines off his center console. And that's when cocaine started entering my life. And you know, I thought I was a rock star right then. I was like, this is great. This is life, you know? Shortly after that, because of what he did, was doing, his lifestyle, he was out of the band. And shortly after that, I was out of the band. And that was pretty devastating for me. But I started hitting harder in everything and hanging around with the people that like to do what I do and just party all the time. School caught on to me. I continued to go to school for a second senior year because when I turned 18, I got the Social Security check from my father. So I was getting like close to $1,000 a month. So I signed up for the next year, even though I had like 8 credits and needed like 25. But the principal called me in and said, you know, after Christmas break or whatever, yeah, just get a GED or job. We just don't want you back here. So I got a job, temporary job for a week at an instant mail place. And I thought I was going to work there forever because the first day, me and my buddy both got a job there, a temporary job. The boss says, oh, you guys got a car? It's this old guy. We're like, yeah, give me a ride at lunch. We go for a ride. He picks up a case of beer. We sit around the back of the building. We drink it all, and then we go back to work. And that happened every day for a week. And then they didn't need us anymore. That was devastating, you know? But that's the mentality. I thought that was normal, you know? I thought it was normal. So there was about 6 months left in school. So I'm like, I'm a drug addict. Smoke a lot of weed, do a lot of stuff. I'm going to be a school bus driver. Yeah. They had ads all the time. You work in the morning, you work in the afternoon, you get off in the middle. Great job. And they didn't drug test back then. That was not a good idea. I put my hat back in, my hair back in my hat because I had long hair. And I go and I do the test, and I'm supposed to, like, train for 5 days. I train for 2 days. They're like, you're going to be one of the great ones. I go take my test. And the mentality of my life at that time was, it's okay to, on my layover behind Super America, to sit in the bus and smoke some weed. And then I'm going to pick up more kids and drive them to school all high. I was okay with that. That's where my thinking now I look back on, and I think anybody would look back on, what the hell were you thinking? You know? But I did that. And, you know, you pick up a full bus, and the brakes went out one day, and, you know, and I'm high. It could have been bad, and it wasn't. And everything that could have been bad in my life and wasn't was a warning for me and was only God keeping me out of that. I know that today. He's done a lot of things for me that other people didn't get that break, that I don't think I deserve, but it's so I can be here today and tell my story, so maybe it'll help somebody else figure it out. But I made it through the school busing without an incident, which was good. And my brother got me a job with a medical supply place. I'm driving a truck and delivering supplies. And he moved on. I got a drunk driving, my first one back in 1990. And that was my second time getting into treatment because I had to go for an assessment. And they recommended outpatient treatment. So I went to Arrow Counseling, met with Jim Arrow, and I told him straight up when I got there, I'm like, dude, not even 21. There's no way I'm going to stop drinking, but I got to be here. He's like, that's cool. He's like, you just show up. Don't be drunk or high when you get here. We'll sign you off, and you can go on your way. You just got to do your time. So I did that, and I was pretty honest during the whole treatment because why not? You know, I just did what I did, and I went through it and was done with it. At that point, I started hanging around with some guys that would come over and hang out in my mom's basement. Still in my mom's basement. I was living the dream. Today, it seems like it changed, but back then, I was homeless. If I lived in my mom's basement over 18, then I was considered homeless. So I would say I was homeless till I got sober. But they'd hang out, and they'd come over, and they would start smoking crack in my basement. And I'd let them, and I'd do my thing and play my video games and hang out and go to work, come back, and whatever. But, you know, it was only a matter of time before I said, let me try that, you know. And it's all a blur from there. I tried it. It was, and that's what my life became. It became the sought, the seeking, the only thing in my life, the only thing that mattered. You were my friend if you had money, if you got paid that day. I was your friend if I got paid that day. That was the relationship I had. All those people that were my friends, that were my true friends, didn't want anything to do with me. My best friend from like seventh grade didn't even invite me to his wedding. You know? But that's who I was. People didn't want to be around me unless they were like me. Girls didn't want to date me unless they smoked crack and they could get something from me. It was a long time. Christmas, sit with the family, know I'm going to get a card with money, and I'm gone. I'm spending the day in the crack house. That was my Christmas. Where I worked, there was abundance of diapers, baby oil, baby powder, you name it. I worked for a medical supply company. So I was stealing everything, taking it down to the corner stores down in Milwaukee and selling it to the guys who'd put it, not for resale, but they'd put it on their shelves. I was giving it to the dope guy for trade, you know, all that stuff. And I was taking so much stuff, I was taking money. Took all the keys away from everybody. I'd bust in the window, you know? And I knew it was gonna come back to me, but I did not care. That was the insanity of the addiction in me. I didn't care when the consequences could come or what. I just wanted what I wanted now. It got crazy. I put myself $30,000 in debt as a young man in my early 20s and declared bankruptcy. And then got another job at night. Somehow I held on to my job, and I lived in my mom's basement, had a meal on the table. So some of my buddies were like moving to Florida where it's warm and living in the woods there because it was cheaper and it was warm. But I didn't have to go run it off because I was hiding out in my mom's basement. She was a big enabler that way too. But I got that other job at night driving around in a car with transcriptions from hospitals to people's houses. And I started using the mobile card to buy cartons of cigarettes and fill up tanks. And I knew that, I wasn't stupid. It was going to come back to me, but it did not matter. You know, whatever I could do. My buddy called pulling rabbits out of hats. Where are we going to get a rabbit out of a hat? Man, we got to buy a rabbit. So between that, the constant drinking, staying out to 2, 3 a.m. with the people from work, having relations with married women that I worked with, which is way beyond the way I was raised and how I should act, but it didn't matter. It came to a point where I don't know where I was or what was going on, but I was starting to seek for help, and I had that knowledge of two treatments, you know, from the past. And so I called my buddy Jim Arrow up, and I go, I need to see you. I really need to talk to you. And he had me come in, and I sat down, and he said, so what's up, Jim? And I told him, you know, I hate people, you know, some people in the world, and I can't stand them, and I've become that. You know, the person that steals everything, that lies, that I don't even know what the truth is anymore because I lie so much. I take advantage of my family, everything, that I just can't stop doing it because of crack cocaine, you know, and he's like, he was floored. Because he pulled my file out and was flipping through it in front of me, and he was looking at it before I got there. And from that time, from the drunk driving, when I was just drinking, which isn't a good thing for me either, but how honest I was, every page, even the counselor that I was under in the group, you know, pretty much every page talked about my honesty. And once I started smoking crack, and those years went by, I completely flip-flopped. I became, you know, the complete opposite of who I was. So he got me into, I didn't have insurance because I didn't want to pay for it. So he got me in, gave me a deal on some outpatient. I was going for about 2 weeks. And I walked into my day job, and there they were, Brookfield's Finest, ready to take me away. So I got handcuffed. Talk about embarrassing, huh? Handcuffed in front of everybody in the office and taken out and taken down to the Brookfield Police Department, where the detective sat me down and he had said, you know, Jim, things were happening at this place, things were happening at this place. You know, it wasn't hard for us to figure out what was going on. And I said, I know. And I was almost relieved. It was like, you know, I'm caught. Thank God. You know, and I told him, I said, yep, it was all me. You know, he goes, drugs. And I said, yep. I said, crack cocaine, I just can't get off it. And I told him that a couple weeks, I just started outpatient. It might have been a savior, it might have been another God thing to get me to go in there before that. Just didn't make it look like I was just doing it because I got caught, that I reached out before they caught me. So needless to say, drove me to my car. He said, you know, they don't seem like either place is pressing charges. You just don't have a job anymore. And the DA, it's iffy with these cases because they didn't say you couldn't take that stuff. You were legal to be there. You worked there. So nothing probably had come of it. So I was like, all right. So I get in my car. He drops me off. He says, don't go in there. Just go home. You don't have work here tomorrow. So by the time I get home, my buddy, who I got a job where I worked, already had called and told the whole family, hey, guess what? So I couldn't even, you know, hide it for a while or anything. It was all up. Parked my car and took a walk. And I don't know where that walk went, but it ended me up at the, and it was a little bit of a walk. It ended me up at the emergency room again at Waukesha Memorial Hospital. Because I knew the outpatient wasn't going to do it. I knew just going here and there and whatever, it wasn't going to do it for me. And they tried to get me to wait out the weekend. I said no. So the human services guy came out and down, had me sign for funding. And they took me to Lawrence Center, which I didn't know was there, but they had an off-campus thing now. And there I was introduced to Cocaine Anonymous. Wednesday night CA meeting in the building, and then Saturday morning would pick us up and take us to my home group, Razor's Edge in Big Bend. Come see us sometime, 9 a.m. on Saturdays. But those meetings are, you know, one's gone, but Razor's Edge is still my home group. I did that 14 days, and I think I went in to get off cocaine. You know, I wasn't clicking yet that it was all or nothing. And the thing for me was a gal came in about halfway through my treatment and started playing footsie with me, and she was kind of cute. So I'm thinking, oh, this is a good idea. Yeah, even though they say, they don't know what they're talking about. So I started seeing this girl in treatment. We got caught the last day. They sent me home 2 hours early, and the counselor said, Jim, sat me down. He goes, I'm not supposed to tell you this, but she's been through 7 treatments before this. And you two are going to live happily ever after, aren't you? The 10 people in that group where they say one's gonna make it and the rest of you aren't, 2 of us were. You know, that was my thinking, too. And I know today why they say to stay away from it, because when I got out of there and continued that, it was nothing but a distraction. New relationships, sober, way sober, I found out, are hard enough to start and deal with, and insanity of to think that I was able to do that and work on me and save my life was just silly. It was just insane. But I did. I tried. I was trying to save her and trying to save me at the same time, and she didn't want saving. You know, going to places I shouldn't have been, and I wasn't strong enough to say no. You know, and I was still in that mindset of, I want to drink yet. So I was going to meetings, and then I would try to say, no, don't go drink tonight. Then I'd go drink. And then I remember getting so drunk and driving down the road and on the freeway and say, I can get off the freeway. I don't have to do this. But I couldn't get my arm to turn me off the freeway. I was just off. You know, and that's the power. That's one of those things that I think back and think of the power that it had over me. Because of the relapse, and, you know, and it's funny because I was never in jail up until that point and never really gotten in tons of trouble. And in that year of relapse and everything, I was in jail. I had criminal damage of property. I had all this stuff, court cases, blah, 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 blah. And I could blame her, which I could justify that, but it was me, you know. I had my part in everything. Shouldn't have been there in the first place. But my mom, you know, because I was relapsing and stealing money, a month after I got a treatment, I couldn't get a job. These places were telling them everything I did, and I was there 6 years. I had no reference. So I went in by this guy, called me in for an interview, and I tried honesty for the first time in a long time, and I said, you know what? I've been smoking crack for like 5 years. Got out of treatment a month ago. Going to meetings, having a little rough patch, but I need a job. Guy looks at me, and as much as I hate him today, he was my savior then. I don't hate him. It's just a little rough, but... he said, it's $7 an hour. You get paid once a month. And raises don't come often, and they're not very much. I said, I'll take it. And they kind of probably regretted that first year, too, because I got cuffed out of there one day. I called up, and I said, you know, I'm not going to make it because I'm going to go into treatment for a couple days and get this stuff out of my head, you know. Well, we're just going to have to. So I walked from the police station. I don't know if you know where the police, by the cow in Waukesha, all the way back to Fox Run. Just to get to work by noon so I keep my job. But mom booted me out because of the relapse, and I went and crashed on a friend's couch. Went into the halfway house, Genesis house, halfway house then, because the couch wasn't doing it. And I was doing okay, and, you know, by the grace of God, I won the Bill W. spot at Razor's Edge to come to the first annual CA Wisconsin convention. And some of you know Paul H., he picked me up at the one day I overslept, and he's coming out, I hear this, Jim, yelling down the hallways and the halfway house. He's screaming and hooting and hollering, trying to wake me up on a Saturday morning. But I made it to that. I had a twisted disc. I was all hunched over sideways, but I was there, you know. And it was seeing all this and all these people and all this happiness and all the smiling in these rooms and hearing these messages is what kept me sober. But I wasn't through because that gal, oh, yeah, I love her. I would pop in there, and lo and behold, one day there's a bunch of booze, and I get drunk, and I go back after curfew. They know I'm drunk. I go to bed. I got up before anybody else. I packed all my stuff. I went in by the counselor. I said, I'm going. He's like, don't you even want to talk about this? Because they may give me a second chance, but I'm like, I'm not letting you give me a second chance. I'm leaving. I went lived in my car for about a week in the parking ride on 94-164. And then a guy who worked in the same building as I worked said, hey, I need a roommate. I'm like, oh, cool. So I moved in there, and we had like two living rooms, and I was still like, I'm not sure I'm ready to quit drinking. So I was trying that drinking yet and all that craziness, and I had recovery here and booze here, and it just wasn't working. So I was living in my misery, and I wasn't working the steps. I wasn't doing what they told me to do. But I would sit in my living room, and I would drink by myself. And I'd go down to the liquor store with my change. I didn't care how many people were behind me. I'd be counting my change, get a little bottle of something. One day I'm sitting there, and he comes home. He would go out every night. He'd go bowling, darts, pool, whatever, and come home hammered. But that was justified because he did bowling, darts, pool. He justified it that way. He came home, plops down, passes out for a few minutes, opens his eyes, looks over in my living room, goes, you are pathetic. Because I'm sitting there with my cooler right next to me. Because I don't even have to get up and go to the fridge. Thank you, Jason. Because wherever he is, man, that clicks something. I made a decision. You know, a lot of things happened, but I made a decision that it was time. And that was October 15th, 1997. And I wasn't one of the guys who came in, like you're learning, and just stayed sober. I had to beat myself up for a while, and that's okay. Just don't be too prideful to come back in and out these doors, because the time you do that is the time you're dead. But I decided to give it a shot. And, you know, my biggest problem in the program at first was God. I believed in God. I was raised Catholic. I believed in everything, but I believed in this God that why would he want anything to do with me after all I did? How could he help me after I just spit in his face for so many years? And a guy that I got the job at started working there, an older gentleman who had a completely different view of the same God that I have, that he loves me all the time. Doesn't matter what I do. God loves me. And I've learned recently that God even looks at today only. He lives in today. He is so happy for me right here. He could care less what I did yesterday. He just wants what's right for me and good for me today. So that was a struggle to work this program, to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. Why is God going to help me? So at that point, it all kind of clicked. Him saying that, me learning from him, I was able to say, God, I need your help, and truly mean it, and start working the steps. I ran out and I found the guy that kind of came in around the same time I did. A great guy. He got a year. I didn't. In that time, I asked him to be my sponsor. I said, I got the three. Let's go 4 or 5. I got to do this, you know, because I know a lot of those nights sitting home drinking, it was all that guilt and shame and pain that I was feeling that I was trying to bury because I wasn't working on it. So I did 4 and 5. And before I did that, I got out of that situation living. A friend of mine who lived just up the hill from the halfway house by the hospital had a one-bedroom, two-car garage made out of stone that was converted into a one-bedroom apartment. And she lived in there with her daughter and was moving out. $300 a month, just me and the mice. It was perfect. You know, it wasn't much, but it was mine, and I was out of situations. I did my fourth step in that living room and did my fifth step with my sponsor in that living room. And I've been clean and sober ever since. And I know it has everything to do with working those steps and turning it over to God. There's no doubt about it, because before that, I wasn't having it. The addict never goes away, though, because about probably 6-7 months into the whole deal, I'm like, hey, I'm doing pretty good. I'm feeling good. Maybe after a year, I can drink again and not use. And I had the plan. After a year, I'm going to try it. So that gal who I took over her apartment calls me up and goes, hey, our friend Jenny is getting married. They're going to Vegas. I think it'd be really cool if you came. We could split the room. We could go to Vegas, blah, blah, blah. And there were normies. They drank a little, smoked a little weed once in a while. So I'm like, that's a good idea. I'm going to go there. So I go to Vegas, and that whole weekend was one of those moments where sitting no matter where I was, when you see that tray go by, it was like slow motion. Like the most beautiful woman just walked by. And that's all I could think about, and all I wanted was a drink. And so it wasn't a fun weekend for me. It was a very learning experience for me. I got on that plane, and I always say that I was closer to God, and he was finally getting in there because I was so high in the sky, that I made a decision that day that it was all or nothing. I started getting involved when I got back, you know. I've been on convention committees. I've served at area. I've done all kinds of stuff to keep myself out of that. And I know it has to do with working the steps. I know it has to do with making the decision, and only with God in my life in these rooms could I have done it. But our primary purpose is to help the addict who still suffers. And I'm going to fast forward in my recovery a little bit, because I sobered up when I was really young, so that's my story about that, and then I got sober really young. But that job after 11 years, I was making good money. I was buying boats and bikes and you name it. I was trying to fill a hole that I had to fill. And I was trying to fill it with things, because I went back to being that foxhole prayer spiritual guy again, where I only talked to God when it was convenient, when I needed something, when I was asking him for something. I wasn't growing spiritually, you know. I was regressing spiritually, and I was trying to fill my life with things. So God said, okay, you're miserable where you work. We're going to get rid of that. I went in there, and they gave me a resignation, a severance package, and said, you're done here, just like that, for no reason. I was devastated. This program helped me that way, because I thought about drinking for a split second, and then I went and chowed down at Denny's. And after a year, I got clean, 4 or 5 packs a day. I quit cold turkey smoking, and I used this program and what it taught me to do that as well. But going back to losing that job, I was devastated, and I turned to God, and I felt like dirty, because I was really turning to God, and I ignored him again for how many years? So I went to a church I passed every day, because I'm a Christian, And, you know, if I'm going to grow spiritually, I need to go where other people that think the same way I do go. Just like this program taught me to come here to stay clean and sober, I needed some place to grow what I believe, grow that relationship with my higher power. And I sat in there devastated, jobless, and I told God I'd come here every week for a month. I mean, for a year, I'm sorry. I committed to him, and I said, people that say that, do that, it gets better. You know, and I was in pretty low at that time. I moved to Milwaukee. They had a planted church at a movie theater called The Ridge. I went there. They played Guns N' Roses on Mother's Day, a sweet child of mine. It was an awesome church. They've mellowed out since. But I started going to church, and I started learning, and I started small groups and getting involved like I do here to grow. Because in these rooms, we all have different higher powers, and it's an awesome place to learn and know we have to do it. But for me, it wasn't a place that I could grow spiritually. And that's why I was saying how our attitude still suffers. 10 years, I was suffering, you know. There's people around here with years of sobriety suffering. So we got to watch for them, you know, like me. Say, hey, what's going on? And don't forget that they're just human too. But the way it ended up and where I'm at today is I got involved with that church. Like I said, I started setting up and tearing down because we were a mobile church. We moved into the old Walmart building on Highway 100 in Layton. And the pastor was always pumped up about a recovery program. And once we got in the building and a year or two went by, it was time. And we got a team together and we started forming it. My friend Diane, who was supposed to introduce me. There she is. She's a big part of that in my life today. I love her very much. I don't think she knew what she was getting into when I asked her, but she hopped in. Service junkie, I know her. But we started that, and it's really cool today because it's a place I can work on my character defects. It's a place I can work on everything. It's a miracle that I can use what these rooms have taught me to help other people. There's guys coming in there that I deal with, guys that are, you know, addicted to pornography and sexual addictions and all this stuff that, you know, we would consider a character defect, I think, as well. So I still go to my meeting every Saturday morning. If I'm in town and nothing else important, and it's got to be important, is going on, I'm there Saturday morning, Razor's Edge, go to breakfast. It's a ritual. 18 years clean, and I still go there every week. I do my Celebrate Recovery. I try to hit events and all that kind of stuff, but I continue to work the program, and that's what's important to me today. So I'm going to stop rambling, but I want to say just newcomers. You know, I said a lot of things today, but if you can take, if I would want you to take something, if I was a newcomer sitting there and I want to hear something, is work the program, get a sponsor, keep coming. Don't let pride and fear get in the way. Get involved. Get rid of the old people. Relapse after relapse, I kept coming back with my tail between my legs, and I finally stuck. And the other thing is without a higher power, we cannot recover. We know that. We're taught that. Whatever that is, it doesn't matter what it is, if it's Christian, Buddha, Muslim, whatever you believe, grow that. Find other people, too, outside of these rooms that believe the same thing you do. Go in a community and learn from them like we learn how to stay clean and sober here, because it only helps. It only helped me, and I got so far to go. But it's been a miracle these last, you know, 5-6 years that I've got so much more growing to do, but I'm not the person I was, you know. So I'm grateful to be here, and thanks for asking me. Have a good day.